Three very special, unique, historical celebrations of Sukkos, which transcended the baseline annual celebration of Sukkos associated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashkacha, associated with Hashem's protecting us, Kibas Sukkos, Hoshavtias B'nei Yisrael, B'yotzios HaMeiretz Mitzrayim. One during the days of Shlomo HaMelech, one about 500 or so years later in the days of Ezra, and then about 200 years later, in the days of the Maccabim and the Hashmonaim, in the aftermath of the Hanukkah miracle. All three centered upon Yerushalayim, all three centered upon the Beis HaMikdash, but each illuminated and extracted a different latent aspect of Chag HaSukkos. Sukkos is always associated with the Beis HaMikdash for two reasons. Number one, the famous debate between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, whether the huts in the desert wore practical wood or other material, serving solely pragmatic purposes of protection and insulation, or there were supernatural huts of Anani HaKavod, huts in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself to the Jewish people, appeared to the Jewish people, huts that facilitated an encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a Gilui Shechina. In fact, there are several mentions in the Gemara in Sukkos, probably most prominently the Gemara in Daf Tes. Sukkah is the only object of a mitzvah which doesn't have Hashem's name on it, like tefillin, or a Sefer Torah, which is invested or imbued with halachic kedusha. There is no kedusha to a shofar, there is no kedusha to tzitzis. They can be discarded after use. They can't be trivialized during use, because that would be disrespectful to the mitzvah, but subsequent to their use, they can be discarded freely. But a sukkah has literally shem shemayim, k'shem shechal shem shemayim ala chagiga, kach chal shem shemayim ala sukkah, the Gemara Darshan's in Sukkah, Daf Tes Amud Aleph, and hence at least the schach, some machlokas between the Rambam and the Rash about the walls, but the schach have an isser hana, you can't get any pleasure or benefit from it, mundane, because it is invested with kedusha. The Gemara interprets the shear of yud fachim of the schach as reflective of the fact that that's the midway point between man and God. Hashem never descended more than 10 tefachim, or lower than 10 tefachim to this earth, and that's where man meets Hashem, at a height of 10 tefachim. And of course, this yields a very famous phrase in Kabbalah, Tzila Dimehem Nusa, we're sitting in the shade of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The word shade itself has some very important connotations, but not for now. So inasmuch as a sukkah was not just a hut of providence, and a hut of hashgacha pratis, and a hut of protection, but a shelter, which also enabled an encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was very easy to associate a sukkah with a Beis HaMikdash, with a Beis HaMikdash with a sukkah. And there's a separate reason that the sukkah was always associated with a Beis HaMikdash. It's based on a medrash. The Pasuk in Tehillim writes, Vahi b'shalem sukkah uma'onaso b'tzion. Notice the association between the word shalem, which at least the Medrash interprets as a partial reference to Yerushalayim. Remember, Yerushalayim was called Shalem when Melchizedek was the monarch, when Avraham visits in Parshas Lech Lecha. So Hashem, Vayhi B'Shalem, in Shalem there's a sukkah. The Medrash describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu building a sukkah in Yerushalayim, presumably at the Beis HaMikdash in Har Moriah, davening on behalf of Geula. What does it mean for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to daven? That, of course, is already stated by the Gemara. What does it mean for Hashem to daven? But Hashem is at least yearning for Geula, and he's establishing a sukkah as a temporary holding place or holding device, waiting for his me'ona, the end of the pasuk, me'ona so b'tzion, waiting for that final residence to be built. So Hashem says, until my me'ona, my final palace, will be built in Sion. And Sion is a reference to the eschatological messianic era, the everlasting era, Yimloch Hashem li'olam, Elokayach Sion. Until Sion is reached, I will build a temporary sukkah in Shalem. I will build a temporary sukkah on the site of the Beis HaMikdash and wait for the final Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. So it's the temporary nature of a sukkah. A sukkah has to be a diras arai. A sukkah can't be permanent in its height, in several other features of the sukkah. So until the Beis HaMikdash is constructed, Hashem builds a sukkah. So that when we build our sukkah, we're simulating HaKadosh Baruch Hu's own construction of a sukkah. And for us, the sukkah represents a yearning for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, because Hashem chooses it as a temporary architectural structure to wait for the final palace to be built. For these two reasons, sukkah always evokes imagery associated with the Beis HaMikdash. Number one, again, because it enables an encounter with the Shechina, even prior to, of course, the Beis HaMikdash being built, or the Mishkan. Number two, its temporary nature signifies an anticipation of something more permanent, and Jews are always living with anticipation of that permanent construction project of the Beis HaMikdash. Probably for a third reason, because Sukkos, every holiday demands performing mitzvah of simcha, enjoying, celebrating food, wine, family, presents. But the Rambam describes Sukkos as a day of extra simcha, of additional simcha. And the Beis HaMikdash was the location of that simcha. So the actual sukkah was always associated with the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash always had that unique season which Sukkos initiated. But Shlomo HaMelech senses something additional, some additional alignment between Chag HaSukkos and the Beis HaMikdash, beyond just their joint enabling of an encounter with the Shechina, beyond just the symbolism of the sukkah anticipating the ultimate construction of a Diras Keva of the Beis HaMikdash. In Melachim Aleph, Shlomo HaMelech schedules the Chanukas HaMishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, he schedules it, presumably, it seems as if he schedules it for Sukkos. I say presumably because the Pasuk is a little bit unclear. In Melachim Aleph, Parakhas, Pasuk Beis, Vayikalu HaMelech Shlomo, Kol Ish Yisrael, B'Yerach HaEtanim, they gather in Elul, one of the nicknames for Elul is Yerach HaEtanim, Bechag, during the holiday, Hu Chodesh HaShvi. Now, it's unclear whether this Chag, referred to in the Pasuk, in Pasuk Gimel, Pasuk Beis, is this Sukkot, and the seven-day inauguration celebration of the Beis HaMikdash overlap with Sukkot, or it was during Tishrei, and it was its own Chag, perhaps before Sukkot, as the Radak suggests. But the simple reading of the Pasuk suggests that Shlomo schedules the inauguration of the first Beis HaMikdash for Sukkot itself. And he had good reason to, based on historical precedent. The Vilna Gaon claims, in his commentary to Shir HaShirim, that the construction project for the Mishkan commenced on Tesvav Tishrei. If you calculate the Psukim in Vayakhel, Moshe descends on Yom Kippur in the desert on that second year after leaving Mitzrayim. And then he announces, and then 2 days, the people deliver goods and materials. The Vilna Gaon claims that the construction itself commenced on Sukkos, on Tesvav Tishrei. So already there are historical echoes of Sukkos being a day when Jews begin to dream of a Mishkan. So hundreds of years later, when Shlomo hopes to inaugurate his Beis HaMikdash, and with it Utopia, and perhaps the end of days, he schedules, and it's not clear how he schedules, because it seems like at least the simple reading of the Psukim has the Beis HaMikdash completed months before. It's hard to know how exactly that scheduling worked out, whether he delayed the inauguration 10 months, or the report of it being finished 10 months means it was finished after Sukkos, after this inauguration ceremony. Either way, Shlomo senses that relationship between Chag HaSukkos and the Beis HaMikdash, between the structure of a sukkah and the structure of a Beis HaMikdash, between the simcha of Chag HaSukkos and the simcha of the Beis HaMikdash, and he schedules the inauguration, seven-day inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash for Sukkos, even though in our minds this would be Ein Ma'arvim Simcha B'Simcha, this would be a collusion or a conflation of two different events, each which warrants its own celebration. Shlomo wants to overlap them. Shlomo wants to align them. Now, perhaps for Shlomo there's a different reason that the Chanukah's Beis HaMikdash should coincide with Sukkos. Shlomo has a very universalist agenda, in part because he sees himself as inaugurating what he hopes to be, the end of days. The Jewish people are now situated in their capital. They're situated in Yifei Nof, Misos Kol Haaretz, the highest and most attractive place on earth. This is one of the words we employ in the Hoshanos called Even Shetia, which typically are read on the second day, depending on when Sukkos is Chal. And the entire Hoshanos is dedicated to different nicknames for the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, one of the nicknames is Sukkas Shalem, the Sukkah of Shalem. One of them is Yifei Nof Misos, they follow the Aleph base. Shlomo senses a universalist agenda. Shlomo davens, not just on behalf of Am Yisrael, but the Beis HaMikdash should service an entire world. In Melachim Aleph, Perachas, Pasuk Mem Aleph, Vegam El HaNachriya, She'elo Me'amcha Yisrael Hu, even a Gentile, if he travels from a distant land to pursue you, to pursue the knowledge of you, he hears about your name, I'm just paraphrasing the Psukim, he witnesses all the miracles, and he davens, to this house, or through this house, you should listen in Shemayim, Atat Tishma Shemayim B'chon Shiftecha, V'yasisa K'chala She'ikor Elecha Nachri, and you should listen to the tefillos of the Gentile, L'man Yedun Kol Ha'Me'aretz HaShemecha, everyone should recognize you, echoes of the Pasuk, which we all recited so frequently, Rosh Hashanah, Slichos, Yom Kippur, Ki Beisin Yeshaya, Beis Tefila, Yikare, L'chol Ha'amim. What better way to strike the universalist tone of the Beis HaMikdash than align the inauguration ceremony of the Beis HaMikdash with the Chag that carries universalist elements, and that's the Chag of Sukkos. The Chag of Sukkos that contains 70 parim, the 70 oxen that are sacrificed in various stages as part of the 7 days of Karban Musaf for the 70 nations of the world. Jews serve the world by spreading the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and introducing and extending the welfare and prosperity of the human condition through religious experience. And Zechariah is aware that ultimately, when Mashiach comes, and perhaps many of the holidays will fade, as Chazal tell us, and we'll no longer celebrate Pesach at the very least, but evidently not only will we celebrate some degree of Sukkot, but all the nations will celebrate Sukkot. Now, one could claim that maybe the Gentile nations will celebrate Sukkot and we won't, but certainly there will be an element of Sukkot, as Zechariah writes in Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Tezayin, V'haya kol ha'notar mikol ha'goyim, all the remaining peoples, Habayim al Yushalayim, the flock to Yushalayim, as described in Yeshaya, V'alu midei shana b'shana, they will ascend on a yearly basis, L'shtachavos l'melech Hashem tzivakos, to submit to the Rabboni Shel Olam, V'lachog es Chag HaSukkot, and to celebrate Chag HaSukkot. We obviously don't have a reference to the nations celebrating any other holiday, even during the days of Mashiach. So there's a second reason that Shlomo wants to overlay the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash with Chag HaSukkot, not only because of that perennial, perpetual association between the encounter of the Shekhinah that the Mishkan or the Mikdash enables and the encounter of the Shekhinah that every Jew senses in his Sukkah based on the encounter during the Midbar. And not only because Shlomo senses that the temporary Sukkah is a metaphor for the temporary residence of Hashem during periods of history until the final utopia, and Shlomo is unsure, of course, whether he will usher in the utopia, he hopes to, but because Shlomo wants to establish the Beis HaMikdash in universal terms, not just parochial terms, and he feels the best day to establish that is the holiday of Sukkot. And then about 500 years later, there's a different Sukkot, less celebratory, less jubilant, certainly less triumphant. Ezra has returned, and with him 41,000 Jews, not that many, most have remained behind in Persia, and they've gathered on Rosh Hashanah. This is, gathering is described in the Chemia Perachas. And now they've gathered again. And they open the Sefer Torah, having gathered first on Rosh Hashanah. This probably is on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. It's not clear. The Pasuk describes this as Yom HaSheni. And they discover a great epiphany. They discover in the Torah a holiday called Sukkos. And they instruct everyone to travel to the mountains and to collect. Listen to the trees they're asked to collect. Olive wood, hadassim, dates, tamarim, aley tamarim, Alei Etzavos. So as if they're collecting wood, some of which will be used for the sukkah, some of which will be used for Dalet Minim, it appears. And they all build sukkot, vayasu lem sukkot, on their roofs, in their courtyards, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, in the thoroughfare, the Shar HaMayim, near the water aqueduct, over Rechov Shar Ephraim, another big thoroughfare. And all these people who have returned from exile, they celebrate Sukkot, they sit in their Sukkot. Here's the key line. Ki lo asu mime Yeshua ben Nun kein b'nei Yisrael ad hayom ahu v'hatisim chagad olam miod. Because they hadn't celebrated Sukkot, at least the literal way the Pasuk reads, in close to 1,000 years, since the days of Yeshua ben Nun. The Gemara is aghast, the Gemara in Erechin. How could it be they haven't celebrated Sukkot since the days of Yehoshua ben Nun? And the Gemara reinterprets this pasuk as a reference to the decision of Ezra to install Kedusha in a fashion similar to the manner Yehoshua installed Kedusha. The language of the Gemara is Makish bi'asam b'mei Ezra le'bi'asam b'mei Yehoshua. Their entry in the days of Ezra was comparable to their entry in the days of Yeshua. Ma bi'asam b'mei Yeshua manu shmitim v'yavlos v'katru arechoma. Af bi'asam b'mei Ezra, they instilled Kedusha in a manner that would allow them to maintain Shemitah, Yovel, and the holiness, sanctity, associated with walled cities in Eretz Yisrael. And certainly the Gemara is ramping down the audacious nature of this claim. But the Torah, the Tanakh, still writes that pasuk, and evidently, even if they had kept sukkahs, it's hard to imagine they hadn't kept sukkahs in close to 1,000 years, but evidently there was something about sukkahs that they hadn't experienced since the days of Yehoshua ben Nun that was very relevant and very compelling symbolically. And it's hard to know what. The two most popular approaches are, one is said in the name of Rav Kook, that they hadn't actively built the sukkah. Ezra's instructions suggest traveling to the mountains, finding wood, building the sukkot. You can imagine that for that period, it was very easy to fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah. For us, we have to actually construct a sukkah. We live in solid homes, generally roofed residences. We have to construct a sukkah. Some of us have easily a pop-up sukkot or assembly sukkahs that are assembled very quickly, but we certainly can't convert our homes into a sukkah. One can imagine that for much of that period, their homes resembled a sukkah. So there was very little that had to be done in ways of constructing a sukkah. And somehow Ezra wanted them to be more actively involved in the construction of the sukkah. So that would possibly be, and of course the psukkim I just read do suggest instructing them to be more actively involved, to collect the wood, and the pasuk describes them building the sukkot. Vayasu kalakal ashavimena shvi sukkot. But I think there's, and many point to this as well, I think there's a separate issue that makes this sukkot celebration unique. And that's the public sukkot which were constructed. Obviously, inasmuch as sukkot extend our family experience, so most of us aim and look to having individual private sukkot. But part of the symbolism of a sukkah is its collective and inclusive nature. And the Torah writes, Kol hazrach b'Yisrael yeshvu basukkot. Every single Jewish citizen, and he uses a very interesting word, ezrach, and I hope to speak about this in the Dvar Torah and the Shir I'm meant to give this year, Hoshana Rabbah. I'll try to record it. It includes many different people. Ezrach is a reductive identity that everyone, a baseline identity that every single Jew possesses. Kol ezrach b'Yisrael yeshvu basukkot. And the Gemara senses this inclusive, incorporated experience. All the Jewish people can sit in one sukkah, and the Gemara describes this obviously not as a realistic situation, but at least it has to. The laws of sukkahs have to enable or accommodate a sukkah that can contain every single Jew. And the Gemara derives various halachic considerations about regular average sukkot taken from this seemingly impossible scenario. Chazal speak of the sukkah Shalivyasan, the sukkah during the days of Mashiach, which will at the very least house the tzaddikim, or all the Jewish people, according to different accounts. So a sukkah has that sense of inclusion of an entire population. And certainly, a public sukkah would carry that sense of inclusion at a national level more powerfully than a private sukkah. And if you read those psukim carefully in Nehemiah, they're not just constructing sukkot. They're constructing sukkot, I'll read the pasuk again, ish al galgo, so they're constructing private sukkot on their roofs, uvechatzos sehem, so the sukkot's are a little bit larger in their courtyards, which are common areas, uvechatzos beis elokim, in the beis hamikdash they're constructing sukkot, or at least in the harabayis, uverechov shar hamayim, very public gathering places, uverechov shar ephraim. That could be, I mean, the Chassam Sofer speaks about this, that could be the element of Sukkot, which was added during the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. Now, this has very important symbolism, because there are 41,000 Jews who return and actively sit in those Sukkot, probably not all in one Sukkah, but there's a sense of trying to build a coalescent sense of identity amongst the people who have returned. But more importantly, there are scores, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of Jews, who have remained behind in different lands. And they're part of our people, and they have to be included. And there has to be a mitzvah which symbolically includes them, not just in its current structure, but in its foreshadowing of future inclusive sheltering. So these public sukkahs become really important. And the aspect of a sukkah as including large populations within its walls becomes uniquely resonant during the days of Ezra. And for that reason, this celebration, it's not clear that it's a Chanukat Beit HaMikdash. It's not exactly clear as to how these ceremonies interacted with whatever inauguration of the Beit HaMikdash takes place, but Beis HaMikdash is certainly being induced or inducted at some level, and they're gathering, and they're reading from the Torah, and listen to this language, Vayikra b'sefer Torah Sar Elokim Yom b'yom min hayom harishon ad hayom achron. They read each day of Sukkot, each day they read from the Torah, Vayasu chag shivas yamim, they maintain Sukkot, Uvayom Hashmini, and on the eighth day, Atzeres Kamishbat. They maintain Shmini Atzeres on the eighth day. So there's this celebration of return. It obviously is a celebration of Beis HaMikdash. That celebration of return is scheduled for Sukkot. And they add an element which your average Sukkot didn't possess, namely public recitals of the Sefer Torah on a daily basis. Now, there is a Sukkot in which a public recital takes place. That is, of course, the Sukkot of Hakel. Once every 7 years, the entire nation descends upon Yerushalayim during Sukkot. Even people who are typically exempt from visiting Yerushalayim during regular holidays, namely women, children, disabled, but they are expected to attend a 1 in 7 year Hakel ceremony. It was almost clear, according to most opinions, mathematically, that this year that they returned from Bavel was not a post-Shemitah year, hence it was not a year which would have called for Hakel, according to halachic demands and mandates, but they simulated Hakel on Sukkot to create a sense of inclusion, which the Sukkah symbolizes, around the Beis HaMikdash, which was being inaugurated. And this becomes a second added overlap between Sukkot and Beis HaMikdash. As I mentioned before Shlomo ever built his Beis HaMikdash, it was clear that the two coincided. The two enabled an encounter with the Shekhinah. The Sukkah was seen as a temporary dwelling for Hashem. Vayi b'shalem Sukkot. Shlomo adds the universalist element that overlaps between a Beis HaMikdash, which is meant to serve an entire world's population, and Chag HaSukkot. During the days of Ezra, some people are back building the Beis HaMikdash. Some people haven't returned to build the Beis HaMikdash, but they're included in the process of building the Beis HaMikdash by being envisioned as sitting in these huts, these public Sukkot, that are meant to encounter or encompass the entire population. And to highlight that, they choose a mitzvah which demands the presence of an entire population. And sadly, Hakel, at least in its, maybe in its halachic form, was performed because only the Jews who were in Eretz Yisrael, but at that point they knew that they would never invite the entire population to future Hakel ceremonies. So at this moment, where they're building public Sukkot and they're launching the second Beis HaMikdash, Ezra and Nehemiah choose the mitzvah of Hakel, and they simulate the mitzvah. They gather in the streets each day reading from the Torah in a Hakel-like ceremony. And this was the second great Sukkot in history, and the second stage at which the overlap between Chag Sukkot and Beis HaMikdash was lent an added dimension. And then the third Sukkot, which ironically didn't take place on Sukkot. And that's probably the third element which is added. About halfway into the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, the miracle of Hanukkah occurs. And as in the aftermath of that miracle, the Yom Tov of Hanukkah is established. Now, a careful read of the few pages in Masechet Shabbos which describe the laws of Ner Hanukkah yields some very, very strange references to Sukkot while the laws of Hanukkah are being detailed. Probably the most well-known example is the 70 Parim are referenced. Beis Shammai maintains that the candles aren't lit in ascending order on Hanukkah, as Beis Hillel claims and as we enact, but they should be lit in descending order. Namely, the first night, 8 candles, second night, 7 candles, Pauches v'holech, rather than Mosif v'holech. Because of Parei HaChag, because the candles should evoke the descending series of the oxen, which were sacrificed on Sukkot, starting with 13 down to 12. The Gemara talks about Ner Hanukkah, which is placed too high. And if it's placed above 20 amos, the Gemara says it's pasul like a sukkah above 20 amos. Why reference a sukkah above 20 amos? Most importantly is the choice of 8 days as opposed to 7 days. Very famous question of the Beis Yosef, a question which has yielded over 100 answers. Why is Hanukkah, why was it instituted as an 8-day celebration when the miracle was really a 7-day offset, because there was enough oil for 1 day, so the miracle was a 7-day miracle rather than an 8-day miracle. So there are, of course, many, many answers, but one very compelling answer, and it's based on a verse in Sefer HaMakkah, in the Book of Maccabees, which describes the wars and the reinauguration of the Beis HaMikdash. This is from the second Book of Maccabees, Chapter Yud, chapter 10, obviously it's not part of Tanakh, but it's generally seen as authoritative. Vayachogu Chag Lashem, they celebrated the original Hanukkah, Shemonas Yamim, 8 days, Kimei Sukkot, and they remembered nostalgically the days they used to keep Sukkot in the mountains. Now, why did they celebrate Hanukkah as 8 days as they had celebrated Sukkot? Presumably because on the previous Sukkot, the wartime conditions and the battles and perhaps the siege of Yerushalayim had prevented them from at least the national collective celebration of Sukkot. They had missed a Sukkot, at least one. Now it was a few months after Sukkot, and they wanted to recover their lost Sukkot experience. So they celebrated Hanukkah for 8 days as they had traditionally celebrated their Sukkot in the past. Namely, the original Hanukkah was an 8-day holiday meant to evoke memories of lost Sukkah experience, and hence Hanukkah becomes institutionalized as 8 days rather than 7 days in order to maintain this association with Sukkot. The Sfas Emes claims that every Yom Tov in the Torah has a rabbinic parallel. That Yom Tov is not just a mitzvah, but it's part of Jewish identity. And as Jews navigate through history and they establish their own Yom Tovim, so there is part of the D'oraisa Yom Tov which emerges within human-instituted or human-powered Yom Tovim, which is a very powerful statement about our ability to create our own holidays, which are then expressions in part of previous experiences in our collective supernatural past. But the Sfas Emes says, of course, that Chanukah is the Ha'ara, is the, not the echo, but the radiant glow of Sukkot. So this is the third unique Sukkot, not the Sukkot of Shlomo HaMelech, the first inauguration of the Beit HaMikdash, and not the Sukkot of Ezra, the inauguration of the second Beit HaMikdash, but the Sukkot of the Maccabim and the Hashmonaim and the rededication of the Beit HaMikdash that had been plundered, that had been polluted, that had been ravaged. And they didn't schedule it on Sukkot. They celebrated in the immediate aftermath of the military victory and the return to the Beis HaMikdash. But they converted the Chanukah celebration into something which was akin to Sukkot. And perhaps the element of Sukkot, which was innovated, was that Sukkot, more than any other Chag, isn't time-bound. The festival of Pesach relates to an event which occurred on Tetvav Nisan. Celebrating Pesach any other day will be completely, completely baseless. Shavuot, of course, an event that occurred on Vav Sivan. We receive the Torah metaphysically every day, but that mass revelation and that descent of Hashem's Shechina upon the mountain is and was limited to Vav Sivan. Sukkot does not describe a date. In fact, the Midrashim ask why celebrate it at all during the Tishrei, which in the northern hemisphere, the fall, should be celebrated at different periods. It represents timeless experiences, encounters with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, structures that we built for Hashem, that we build for ourselves to encounter Hashem. And that prototype, that paradigm, isn't tethered to a particular month or date. And the Chashmonaim lifts that paradigm from Tishrei and reinsert it into Kislev. And they remind us that though halachically we celebrate Sukkot during Tishrei, more than any other Yom Tov, the ideals and the experiences of Sukkot are exportable and can be extrapolated far beyond the boundaries of a particular day or even a particular month, because Sukkot represents so many of the experiences which the Beis HaMikdash reinforces, and particularly the encounter with the Shechina, which isn't limited to time and isn't limited to place as well. Even without a Beit HaMikdash, we seek to encounter the Shechina. So Sukkot isn't limited to a time and isn't limited to an architectural structure. And the Maccabim, even though they are privileged with a structure that they rededicate, they find themselves comfortable lifting Sukkot and rescheduling it during Kislev. These are three different times that Sukkot was celebrated, in conjunction with the return or the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash. And each time a different element of Sukkot and its relationship to Beis HaMikdash was elucidated. When Shlomo dedicates the Beis HaMikdash, he schedules it for Sukkot to capture the universalist aim of the Beis HaMikdash. When Ezra and Nehemiah dedicate their Beis HaMikdash upon their return, they schedule it during Sukkot to create inclusion for people who haven't returned, who they hope one day will return. And that's why they simulate the mitzvah of Hakel. And finally, when the Chashmonaim and Maccabim celebrate Chanukah, they thread it with a flavor of Sukkot, reminding us that the search for the Shechina isn't limited to time. The sense of Hashem's protection isn't limited to time. It isn't even limited to a structure. It can exist even without the four walls and roof of a classic sukkah.